Okay, good morning. Welcome back, everybody. It is Erev Sukkos, and although there's many things to be doing, it is important to be getting ready for Sukkos as well in when it comes to Torah. Yes, putting up the Sukkah is important, getting all the new clothes is important, and setting everything up and is beautiful, but it's important for us to be preparing ourselves spiritually as well. So we're going to take a moment to do a little bit of learning. There's some exercise here. So what I'd like to do is I'd like to share an idea which I came across just this year. Looking at a new sefer which just came out called Afikei Mayim on Sukkos. This is Rav Moshe Shapiro, Zecher Tzadik Livracha's, was one of his students who recorded a number of his ideas when it comes to the festival Sukkos. And it's going to sound like at the beginning an idea we know. However, it is actually not an idea we know, as it turns out. The beginning is a famous idea, and the end is not so famous. In fact, a very unknown idea. It starts off with a very basic question with a beautiful answer, but the answer does not work. So that's the introduction. So the question is a very famous question. We can word it in different ways. But suffice to say, let's just sort of the prerequisite is the following. Generally speaking, when you do a mitzvah, do you need to have kavanah? Do you need to have intention as to whether you know what you're doing? And this is what happens to be a matter of dispute. We paskin that mitzvah is tzrichos kavana. You need to have intent for mitzvahs, but what that means is that before you do the mitzvah, you need to know that you're doing a mitzvah. So you can't think that you're blowing a musical horn and blow a shofar and then be yotzei on it, as an example. That's what's called mitzvah tzrichos kavana. It has very fascinating ramifications in halacha. However, let's say that I have the right kavana to do a mitzvah, and then when I'm doing the mitzvah, I lose track of things. I'm not thinking about it anymore. I'm not with it necessarily. So what do I do? Is that a problem as well? Then, so we say in that case that's of course you should have kavanah while you're on it, while you're doing it. But if you miss that, then you're yotzei in general. So that often happens to us many, many times, that such circumstances befall us or we fall into such circumstances. So let's just to appreciate this way, the way I sort of, my image of this is it's important to have the train on the right track to make sure that you've ensured that the engineer has made sure that the right siding has been set so that the train is going on the right track. Once you're on the train, and if you're a little subconscious about, well, you're not thinking about things, but you're at least going in the right direction. So it's all right. You have to know where you're going at the beginning. Once you're on, it's not the end of the world if a person is missing kavanah. That's the general rule with mitzvahs.
It's an autopilot.
Very good. Right. So autopilot. So the truth is, I mean, we shouldn't be. Judaism is an argument against. Right. Is against a lack of consciousness. Judaism is an argument to be conscious of what we're doing in our environment. But nonetheless, at the very least, we should know what we're doing. This says the Notam Yehuda is one of the reasons why we have brachas. Is the reason why we have bracha. Anshe Kenes Adola said, they sort of put a stop sign there in the road to say, wait a second, you're about to do something, know what you're doing. That's essentially what it is, to ensure that we have kavana before we start the mitzvah. Okay, that's the backdrop. However, there are certain mitzvahs that if we don't know what we're doing while we're doing it, while we're on the train, then that mitzvah is deficient. And one of those mitzvahs is sukkah, as it happens to be. The Bach, Rav Yoel Sirkis, points out that the Torah goes out of its way to tell us in three particular mitzvahs that we need to know what we're doing while we're doing it too, as well. And they are the mitzvahs of sukkah and tzitzis and tefillin. Because in those three places, the Torah tells us a reason. Those times the Torah says, Laman, by tzitzis, leman, tizkuru v'asisem es kol mitzvasai, v'yisem kedoshim le'elokeichem, we need to know why we're doing it, that's the reason. By tzvilin, it says, leman, tia toras Hashem b'vicha, the Torah of Hashem should be in your mouth, and by sukkos, leman, yeidu dorasechem ki v'sukkos ha'shaltez b'nei Israel, you need to know because that I put you in sukkos. And that's the reason why you make a sukkah, but the problem is that we haven't translated the word. That's a reward, not a reason. So leman can operate. It's a good question. There are another few lemans, but that doesn't mean that particular leman is a reward. It's not the reason we should be doing it. That's why Hashem says, if you do A, I'll give you B. Well, in order to. So it's a different translation of the word leman. But be it as it may, so the stakes are higher when it comes to understanding why we sit in a sukkah. But the problem is that the logic the Torah gives is circular, because it says, make a sukkah, live in a sukkah, because you should know you lived in a sukkah. Like, okay, what's the sukkah? So now we're stuck because the loop is, it's a lot, it's a, it, there's no way to start that, to enter that circle. So what are we supposed to be doing? So what is the purpose of this? That's the why the stakes are high for this mitzvah. So you say, okay, well, we know that the Gemara tells us there's two possibilities as to what the notion of sukkah is. The Gemara tells us that that there's a machlokes Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva as to whether it's what's called sukkos mamish, meaning we just lived in the desert in a haphazard fashion in these huts, or was it that they were protected by the yath ananea covered? Fantastic. So we have this. There's this glorious backdrop as to why it is that we commemorate Sukkot. So that's all fine. But then what that does is the following: is that creates another problem, because if the event, if the particular event which we are commemorating is in fact whether it's the huts that we lived in or the clouds that we were protected by, right? Well, then in that case, we're celebrating at the wrong time, because when did we start making huts?
Right
out of Mitzrayim. What was the first place that Bnei Israel encountered after they left Mitzrayim? Sukkos. If you read in Parshas Beshalach, the first place they arrived at after leaving Mitzrayim was Sukkos, and that's where they made huts for themselves. And we know that the Torah is explicit in Parshas Beshalach that the clouds protected them, and specifically at Yamsuf, that there was an Aish and there was an Anan, and it protected them to the Yamsuf, and it. So we know that those existed then. So if that's the case, if the reason is because the sukkos, Laman Yedu Dorasechim, keep a sukkos hoshavti as Bnei Yisrael, Hashem protected us in these sukkos, well, guess what? Wrong time. It's that Hashem did that 6 months earlier to the time that we're doing it. In fact, it's not just like any amount of time different. It's the furthest amount of time possible to the commemoration date. If you think about it, but how much is the first amount of time you can have? It's not 12 months because that you'll be back at the right same place in the circle. It's 6 months because that means in either direction, it's 6 months, right? So the furthest possible moment in time away from the time that Israel left, that the Hebrews left the land of Egypt, is the time that we're commemorating what happened right afterwards, which is that they said they said in Sukkot.
So why is Sukkot structured that way?
That's what we're getting to. So why is that? So that's the question. It's a very famous question. Just trying to put it in context. So the Torah says that the reason is because of seasons, right? So Rabbeinu Yaakov says that nobody's going out right now into Sukkot. You know, a late year like this, when our Sukkot is in, you know, with an Ibur year, we have an extra month that we're still into the colder season. We're going to feel that this Torah a lot more this year. The last years weren't so bad, to be honest. In the, you know, with whether there's global warming or whatever else is going on, it's not so bad in Florida. Bichlal, it's not even a calculation. Where I grew up, it was the springtime, so it was the tourist reasoning certainly is relevant when it comes to Eastern Europe. And actually, the tour grew up first in Germany, then his father escaped to Spain. But be as it may, it's a, you know, it's a, we'll call it a seasonally applicable answer, right? A way to deepen this, the way the Mishnah Chochma deepens the tour, is he says that if you're a farmer, like we're industrial urban dwellers, but like if you're a farmer and you're out in the field for the last 5 months harvesting everything, then you really do want to go inside. And so it's not about the weather; it's about you just want to be inside right now. You just put the last, you know, a bale of hay out to the field. You just want to be inside. And the Torah says back outside to the field. So maybe it's an element of that. However, there is a deeper answer, and this answer is that the Vilna Gaon, a very, very famous Vilna Gaon. We're going to take a look at this, and folks, don't tune out, because a lot of people say, I've heard the Vilna Gaon, I know the Vilna Gaon, and I'm going to guarantee everybody that you've not learned the Vilna Gaon today. This Vilna Gaon is underappreciated. So yeah, here's where it happens. The Vilna Gaon actually happens to appear in the first pasuk of, or the first few pasukim of Shir Hashem. Let me just get a copy quickly. Okay, here we go. My apologies. So the Shir HaShirim begins with a number of very beautiful images. And although we don't read them right now, we're in the Kohelet stage of things. It is important to just appreciate some of the metaphors that are unfolding in front of us. Let's see if we can try to find it again. It's a short beginning. Here we are. Okay. So it starts off after Shir HaShirim, after introduction. Yishakeinim neshikos piyu, ki tovim dodecha mi yayin. So these three psukim, which are essentially after the introductory pasuk, the Vilna Gaon understands refers to three periods of time and the three festivals. The first one is Shalkeinu Min Shikos Piyuk Ki Tovim Todecha Miyoyin, is HaKadosh Baruch Hu drawing us out of Egypt. The next one is L'Reach Shmonecha Tovim Shemen Torek Shemecha, is referring to Matan Torah, and Moshkeni Acharecha Narutza Hivyana Melech Hadarov, is referring to when we were building the Mishkan, right, which is going to which the Vilna Gaon says parallels itself to Sukkos, which means, says the Vilna Gaon, take a look at in source 5 here. The Vilna Gaon says, the Pasuk Dalad Hu Neged Bias Aretz, She'az Nishlam HaKol V'gam Neged Dalad Rugolim. Okay, in Pesach, Shamlu Shira V'abeiz Neged Shvuos, Shu Matan Torah, V'gimol Neged Sukkos, Shu Zeche Lehekef Ananei HaKovod, She'a Tolu B'binyan HaMishkan. Says the Vilna Gaon, we're thinking about the wrong date. Why do we commemorate Sukkos at the time of Sukkos? Because that was the time that the Ananei HaKovod came when we built the Mishkan. The Ne'uksiv, and it says, Va'om heviu vaze meturat ma'ashikshu lama anachnu oisim Sukkos b'tishrei. Why do we make Sukkos in Tishrei? Kevon shu neged hekev Ananei HaKovod ha'yiroi la'asos b'nisan. Should have been 6 months earlier when we first started using the Sukkos, whether it's the clouds or the hats. Ki b'nisan ha'yot tchilas hekev ananim. Aval niri lefi, sorry. So the clouds disappeared at the Chet HaEgel. Then when Moshe Rabbeinu came down with the Luchos Shnios on Yom Kippur, and he got down the next morning on the Yud Adar Tishrei, which in our year, this year was Thursday morning. And he gave the command to make the Mishkan. Uksiva Omevyu Baboiker Baboiker, it says the crowds, the nation of Israel brought for 2 mornings, which is Yud Beis and Yud Gimel. Oy Beis Yomim, Hare Yud Gimel B'Tishrei, over Yud Adar B'Tishrei, which is today, Erev Yom Yisukos, not Luchos Chacham Lev, Mimoshe Es HaZahav, B'Minan HaMishkan. So then all the wise of heart measured out the materials of the Mishkan. And on the tomorrow, which is the 15th of Tishrei, that's when they started making the Mishkan. And that's when the Ananei HaKovod returned. And that's why we make on Tishrei. So let's appreciate this for a second. What that means is that the Vilna Gaon argues that we are commemorating not the first set of Ananei HaKovod, but the second set of Ananei HaKovod. So I just drew a quick map over here of the points at the bottom of your time map. We left on the 15th of Nisan, that's when we received the first Ananei HaKovod. That was where the protection we were afforded when we left Egypt. And those continued until the 17th of Tammuz. Why the 17th of Tammuz? Because on the 6th of Sivan is when Moshe Rabbeinu went up to Har Sinai, and arguably whether it's the 6th or 7th of Sivan, which is a debate in the Gemara, that Moshe Rabbeinu received the Torah, but he comes down 40 days later on the 17th of Tammuz, which is when the Bnei Israel have the sin of the Chet HaEgel. At that point in time, it argues the Vilna Gaon that the clouds had disappeared. So we now have a gap. Moshe Rabbeinu goes up 2 more times of 40 days, from the 18th of Tammuz to the 29th of Av, and then the 1st of Elul to the 10th of Tishrei. Those are the two next 40s. The third 40 ending on Yom HaKippurim, which is when he gets the Luchos Shnios. Once he gets the Luchos Shnios, that's when he is able to. Atonement is achieved. The Yud Gimel Midas Arachamim have been given over to the nation of Israel. And like we end Yom Kippur on that note of Mechila, then the clouds come back. So what day do the clouds come back? When they start the Mishkan? When do they start the Mishkan? 4 days after the Yom Kippur experience. And that's why it is precise on the date of the return of the clouds that we commemorate this. Interestingly enough, the clouds did not come upon the completion of the Mishkan, which the Midrash tells us is on Chanukah, the 25th of Kislev, but at the beginning of the process is already the time that the clouds come back. This is what we know from the Vilna Gaon. This is a very beautiful idea, and this is a very famous idea. And now it gets complicated. Well, first before it gets complicated, one interesting aside is when I was in Rabbi Sachs, Rabbi Yonatan Sachs's shir, when he was in YU, one of the things he used to say when going through this particular idea is that explains why it is that that women are peturos, are not obligated in the mitzvah of sukkah. Why is that? Well, the Gemara tells us that generally speaking, a mitzvah asay she'azman grama, a time bound positive mitzvah is not incumbent upon women. That's the general default position. But there are certain mitzvahs where a woman is obligated. So let's think about some time-bound mitzvahs where women are obligated. What are some examples? So Shabbos is because the positive and the negative of Shabbos are connected. Zachar and Shamar. What else are women obligated in? Right, so the Abrakosas, right? Oh, Pesach. So the Gemara says on that in Pesachim, Megillah as well. The Gemara in Pesachim says on Daf, Kuf Chesam and Aleph, Vomre B'Yushua B'Nevi, Noshim Chayavos B'Abrakosas Alalu, She'af Heino Yabu Asanes, because they were also included in the miracle. What does that mean? Says the Tosis in that location, Pirush Hashpam She'al Yodom Nigalu. It was through women that the Exodus of Mitzrayim happened. After all, think about all the main characters who were the people who pushed the Geula, Miriam and the Noshim Tzidkonios and all the people along the way were essentially women, right? So all the main characters, the main leaders of the miracles in the festivals which women are obligated in was led by women. Right, Vakosha, Da'af, Mashma, She'enon Ikar. The af doesn't mean to say that they're the main point. It sounds like they're ancillary, so that doesn't sound to match the logic. Void Yerushalmi Goris, She'af Heino Yu Ba'oisei Sofek, Mashma She'oisei Sakona La'ashmin La'harog U'la'abed. So it says, no, the reason is, what's af Heino Yu Ba'oisei Nais? They were under the same threat of the danger that was happening. Meaning, in Mitzrayim, they were equally under threat as well. When it came to Chanukah and Purim, they were equally under threat as well. So if you take
beneficiaries of the miracle,
they're better, exactly. Better, they were also beneficiaries rather than facilitators of the miracle. There seems to be two different ideas as to what Afeno Yobai Sarnes. If you think about it for a second, what was the reason why the clouds left the nation of Israel, according to this Vilna Gaon, is because the Chet HaEgel. Well, guess what? Guess who didn't participate in the Chet HaEgel? The women. Which means to say that essentially, that they weren't the ones who needed the clouds to return in the first place. Right? They weren't the ones who caused it. They were the ones. What did Aaron HaKohen say? Aaron said to them, go to your wives and ask for jewelry, because he knew that that would be a possibility of slowing them down. They didn't, because their wives wouldn't give it to them. So what does it say? It says they took their own jewelry off, right? So in those days, that was the style, and the men took their own jewelry off in order to make the Chet HaEgel. But the women were specifically the ones who didn't do it, and there's a number of ramifications in Halacha. Rabbi Sachs argues that potentially this is another example of this expression of it, is the fact that the Anan Yaakov, who celebrate in Sukkot, they don't need Anan Yaakov in the sense, yes.
You're right,
I understand. They did go away and they were protected, yes.
They didn't have another covenant. They didn't have them.
You're right. So I wonder if perhaps what we learn might deepen what this perspective. But anyways, this is the idea that essentially, in essence, if it were the men, the clouds would still be there. Anyway, so this is the idea we have. The problem is that, and this is like such an unbelievably obvious question to ask. I'm sure, just by a show of hands, who knows this Vilna Gaon? This Vilna Gaon is a pretty well-known idea. You know, it goes right, it's a very beautiful idea, but this Vilna Gaon doesn't make sense for an obvious reason, and that is it's against explicit psukim. You say, what do you mean explicit psukim? So take a look. Look at the beginning. Actually, before we get to the question, I apologize. There's one beautiful proof for this. Before we get to the problem, and that is, I forgot about this. There's a beautiful proof. It says in Sefer in Parashas Kisis, so when it talks about the Chet HaEgel, Moshe Rabbeinu describes Vayar Moshe Esa'am. He comes down. He sees them dancing around the Egel, and then it says Ki Paruahu. Ki Paruah Hashem Aaron Lishimtza Bekomehem. Very complicated pasuk. What's Paruah? What does the word parua usually mean? Says Rashi. Parua means megule. Parua means to say revealed, uncovered, unbecoming. Right? Nisgale shimso veklone. Their disgrace was revealed. Kamoi u parua es roisha yishaba. Sota is you remove her head covering in the base of the Migdash. Says Rav Moshe Shapiro. Isn't that a beautiful description of the removal of the clouds? Parua. They're uncovered. And as a function of who? Ki Pura'ah Aharon. Who was the person responsible for the miracle of the clouds in the first place? Aharon. So meaning, these psukim are hinting to the fact that that's what happened, was the clouds disappeared. Okay, so anyways, that supports the Vilna Gaon. That's a nice hint. But here, listen to this. Let's go back into Sefer Nehemiah. Sefer Nehemiah is the beginning of the Second Commonwealth. The nation of Israel coming back, or a part of them come back to the land of Israel. 42,000 odd Israelites, or at this point they're called Jews. now come back to the land of Israel, and the second round of leaders after Yehoshua, Kohen Gadol, and Zerubbabel, who are the first two leaders, then enter Nehemiah and Ezra. Nehemiah is the governor, Ezra is the spiritual leader sent by with the permission and the power of Cyrus the Great from Persia. And they come back, they bring a smaller delegation of Jews to augment the original Aliyah. They're building the Beis HaMikdash, and there's a spiritual reformation. And we hear about how on Rosh Hashanah, Nehemiah and Ezra set up this podium, and they read from the Torah. It seems like it's not a hakel because it's on Rosh Hashanah, but it's a similar kind of event. And people are listening to this, and they are flabbergasted. They return to their spiritual roots. They said that I can't believe we're doing this at this point in time. Many people are assimilated. There's intermarriages rife. And they're shocked by this. And Ezra Nehemiah says, "Don't worry, go home, have a good meal, enjoy your festival. We'll talk about this soon." And after they come back, then they celebrate the Chag HaSukkos. Everybody's so happy. They never celebrated such a Chag HaSukkos because they didn't have the rules or the parameters to do this. They have this beautiful Sukkos. And after Sukkos, then they gather everybody back and they say, "Listen, there's a few rules that need to be ground rules that need to be set up here." And that's when we have this whole section called V'choros Imoy HaBris, that they made with them the covenant, not a New Testament, but a new covenant. Just to clarify, nothing changed. It's just our commitment to changed. And that's what we read in our Pesukah de Zimmer, B'choras Imoy HaBris, Asas Zeret Zekan Yachiti V'amori V'apriz V'Gigashi. Those are the words of Nehemiah as they establish the second covenant. In that covenant, listen to the words that Nehemiah says to the people. Here's the words he says in Source 10. Atahu alakim ha-shabachata b'Avraham atzeh z'makartim santo shmo Abraham. Sounds familiar? Yes, because we quote this in Pesukah de Zimra. Right? Only the beginning of this do we quote in Pesukah de Zimra. So this is now a history of the Jews. So Nehemiah is trying to tell them, he's giving them historical perspective on what it means to be the nation of Israel. Yes, Hashem chose you, and He chose your patriarch for your forefather Avram, and He changed his name from Avram to Avraham. He found your nation to be their hearts to be true. And He made a covenant with Avram. And He made this covenant to give him the land. And He saw the pain of the nation in Egypt and their cries at Yamsuf, Atit, and Oisus. And He saved you when He heard you calling out at all these terrible times of difficulty. And He killed the Egyptians and He took you out. Okay? Ad kam Pesukah de Zimra. Now, back to history. So Hashem led you with a cloud in the day and a pillar of fire at night. The way that you walked, you were supposed to walk. And Hashem descended upon Har Sinai. And Hashem spoke to them from heavens. Good. Hashem gave you all the commandments then. Hashem gave you all these mitzvahs, including Shabbos. And He gave you bread from heaven. That's the manna. And Hashem gave you tzma'am. Hashem gave you the water from the rock. And Hashem intended to bring you into the land. But you didn't listen. You had other plans. Hashem wanted to take you to the land of Israel. You were stubborn. And despite the fact that we want to go back to Egypt, we call out the Yud Gimel Midos and you didn't leave us alone. Even though we made a golden calf, and we claim that it brought us out of Egypt, and we gave mighty provocations, in your great mercy, you did not abandon us as a Bedouin tribe in the desert. And you did not remove the cloud, which means, listen to what Nehemiah just said. You did the Egel Azov, and you were really bad, and Hashem still protected you with the cloud. So, What in the world does the Vilna Gaon say? The Vilna Gaon said precisely the opposite to that. You can't contradict Sukkim. There's no way you can. The narrative was set. Nehemiah told us this. And by the way, the Vilna Gaon was very aware of these Sukkim. So what in the world is going on over here? Here, the example of being protected after the sin of Chet HaEgel, the specific example he took was not the man, was not the water, it was the Anan, it was the cloud. So what in the world?
The Anan and the Esh. That Anan and Esh is a separate entity that led them. The Anan and HaKabod were a separate entity that was in Chos of Aaron that was protecting them.
Okay, so you may say that it's the Anan which goes in front of them, right? Maybe that's one possibility. But that doesn't protect them, that leads them, yeah.
He didn't remove it permanently.
What? He didn't remove it permanently. So pointed glasses, Paul, yes.
Using two diametrically opposed, there is a middle, because no one who entered the desert survived it. I mean, they all died.
That's true.
So you can't say God protected. What did he protect? Every single one person that entered died.
Well,
so
yes.
There's a middle ground to what you're saying.
That's true. I mean, everybody did die, but it wasn't because Hashem let them perish at the hands of the desert lions.
It was no punishment.
No, they died naturally. Their generation ran out, meaning he allowed them to die naturally. As opposed to if he'd removed his protection, if he'd really removed the clouds, it would have taken about a week or so. I'm saying the scorpions, the snakes, the drought, and the enemies, it would have been a very unpleasant end. But he didn't. He protected them, so they lived, and they, in a certain sense, they just sort of naturally died out because it was 40 years, and so everybody who has sort of reached age by age at that point in time had died out, and of natural causes. So. It wasn't that he didn't protect them. He actually protected them so they, so to speak, in an assisted living facility, right? So there's, which one may argue might actually kill some people, unfortunately. But be it as a man, he protected them to the point that the generation ended. But we have to ask it because this is very specific, meaning from the Vilna Gaon to make this beautiful suggestion that the Anan HaKabod disappeared, you have to really do some fancy footwork as to what Anan, what kind of, it becomes a little complicated. Folks, you see the problem over here? Just to appreciate this. You hear the Vilna Gaon, but you have to read Nehemiah too. Yes?
I think it's interesting that it directly quotes, or indirectly quotes, the
Yirgim Omidos. Yeah, that happens a number of times. By the Meraglim, Moshe Rabbeinu quotes the Yirgim Omidos. Yirgim Omidos Hashem gave us, so we see them quoted a number of times. Yonah quotes the Yirgim Omidos, because that was the tool that was given. So it makes sense. It comes up a lot of times. So here's the key, that you can't learn one Vilna Gaon and then assume that you know what the Vilna Gaon is saying. The Vilna Gaon wrote on everything. He wrote on every corpus of Torah material, from Torah to Nevi'im to Ksuvim to the Gemara to the Mishnah to the Gemara to the Shulchan Aruch to the Rambam. The Vilna Gaon wrote on everything. And you have to sort of appreciate the heck of his ideas. And here's what he says, and he says a very dramatically different idea. Here we need to synthesize the two ideas. Here's how it starts. In Source 11, this is in Parshas Kisisa, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is about to give the Yigim HaMidos HaRachamim, and then he says, this is in Perek Lamed Daled in Kisisa, he says, Ayomer, Hinei Onochi Kores Ibris, I'm going to make a covenant, Neger Kolamcha E'eseh Nifla'es, I'm going to create these wonders that nobody's ever seen. I'm going to do these amazing things with you. Right? So this was the promise that's given after Matan Torah, after the Chet HaEgel. As well, we know these psukim because we recognize them from the laying on the fast day, which is where we hear them most often. We hear them kissed once a year on the fast day, a number of times throughout the year. So you say, so the Ramban asks a basic question. He says, wait a second. He says he's going to do wonders that you've never, like those kind of things you've never heard before. Can you think of any miracles which were bigger and grander than what they've just experienced? I mean, they've come out of Mitzrayim, the 10 plagues, Kriyas Yamsuf, right, Matan Torah. Everything has happened. That's all in the past, all the great miracles. Now he says, I'm going to show you things that nobody's ever seen before. What are those things? Historically speaking, can we identify what it was that he specifically says? That's the Ramban's question, right? Doesn't make sense. So it's a great question. There are the Gros says, the Vilna Gaon says in his commentary on the Chumash, which is Aderes Eliyahu, he says the following. What is it referred to in Source 12? He says, Ratzel Omar, Hinei Anochi Kores Bris, Hu Kiyom Rad His Boin Ha Havtachor Asher Loi Tufar Ki Bechol HaDvarim Achet Monea Masha'en ken b'kiyom ha-bris. He says, usually a covenant will be interrupted, or so to speak, the chait will destroy all this, but the covenant will carry on. Meaning, in a demonstrable way, when you sin, there should be a spiritual ramification of that sin that you should suffer, or there should be some protection which is waived. And that didn't happen in this case. That's the covenant, is so to speak, the nifla'os, is the wonders that are happening. Asher ein ba'ein nira'at atem v'anancho v'choloi ad she tamhu kol ha'umos aleihem v'amru mi zois oyla min abeibar. Kasimras Oshan. The nations all said, wait a second, who's this in the desert with these clouds with you? Right, Besof Bekude Vekovar Hashem Moleyes Ki Anan Hashem Ala Mishkan Yomam V'av Sheholach Anan Lifneim B'Yetziyosim Mimitzrayim L'hoyo Elosh L'shato Adayam. Says the Vilna Gaon, the clouds were only with them until Kriyas Yamsov. The Gam L'hoyo L'enei Kol Yisrael, and it wasn't for all of Israel to see, Rak Lifnei Nevi'im Shebohem. Only the prophets could see it. Masha ein kain kan. And over here, this is different. Everyone is able to see the clouds. They know that Hashem must be with them. So says the Vilna Gaon, is that what is this incredible thing that's being demonstrated to the world, that Hashem is doing wonders that have never been seen before, is that really when you sin, there should not be a clear assurance of Hashem being with you. But yet here, everyone is able to see that the clouds are with him and they were protected. Because really, says the Vilna Gaon, the clouds disappeared when? The clouds disappeared at the end of Yom Suf as well. If you look back at the time map, I put it back on page 3, the Vilna Gaon is now saying something different. Right? So you're saying that we had the Aron HaKohen from 15th of Nisan, but when did they disappear? 7 days later, on the 22nd of Nisan. Right, which was at the Kriyas Yamsov. And even then, only the greatest prophets were able to see them. And then they reappeared now on the 10th of Tishrei. That's, first of all, that's different to what he said in Shir HaShirim. Right? Before he said that the clouds disappeared when? At the Chet HaEgel, and reappeared at Yom Kippur, right? And also the way he describes these clouds, which is ayin ba'ayin, nira atem, that you see HaKadosh Baruch Hu, seems to be that it's a different description of clouds. What is going on here? In fact, we actually have other contradictions to this Vilna Gaon explicitly. So as an example, right after they leave Yom Suf, who attacks the nation of Israel? Amalek. Who are the people the Midrash tells us they attack? The people who are outside of the clouds. But the Vilna Gaon just said the clouds weren't there. Right. Right. It also says that Moshe Rabbeinu went to greet Yisro, his father-in-law. That was before Matan Torah, arguably, right, according to the chronology that we have. And it says that he left the Anan to go and greet his father-in-law. But the Vilna Gaon just told us that the clouds disappeared at Kriyas Yamsov. So something's not right here. So we need to figure out what the Vilna Gaon's really getting at. That was up till Kriyas Yamsov. He's meaning to say, even at Kriyas Yamsov, he says that only the Nevi'im could see the clouds. So the cloud was there, but he says that only the Nevi'im could see it. So what does that mean? I mean, there's something clearly not right here.
There's a famous description where Avraham Avinu was going to look at Har Moriah. How does he know who the cave was in? So he's looking at the mountain and he asks, Rav Goldberg quotes this all the time. He says, he goes to Yisrael and says, what do you see? He says, I see the cloud of the mountain. Yes, Yishmael, what do you see? I see a mountain. Yes, Eliezer, what do you see? A mountain. He says, okay, you guys stay here. Yes, you can come with me.
Very good. So I'm saying that's what it sounds like over here. But that means, according to the Vilna Gaon, it sounds like the clouds were very limited in scope at the beginning. Only a few people could see them for 7 days, and then they disappeared. And now suddenly they're coming. It doesn't sound like it matches the reality we know. What's going on over here? Says Rav Moshe Shapiro, there are two types of clouds. But let's appreciate what this means. The most famous type of cloud is something which we know, and the Torah explicitly tells us about these. So as an example, this is on the last page in Source 13. The Gemara, the pasuk in Shmois Yud Gimel says, "Vashem." This is the beginning of Parshas Beshalach. This is when the clouds arrived. Vashem holeich lifnehem yomam ba'amud anon lan choisam ba'derech v'layla ba'amud esh lahair lohem loleches yomam v'layla. The clouds were there. What was their function? To guard them, to protect them, and Hashem gave these to them as they left the Mitzrayim. But there's another form of what the clouds are for, as an example. So the Gemara over here is talking about in the Masechet Shabbos Chof Beis Amud Beis, it's talking about the lights of the menorah. Right, so the Gemara says, Meser of Sheshes, Michutz HaParoches HaAidus YaAroch, that they would make them outside the Paroches, the Kohen would set up the candles. V'chi la'oira hu tzarech, v'aloi kol arbo'im shana sh'olchu b'nei Yisrael b'amibah, aloi ho'olchu ela la'or. So, that, why would they need to have the menorah lit in the Mishkan? Surely they had light already, right? Surely they had light already. How? What light do they have? Because the Kadosh Baruch Hu gave them a certain light of protection throughout the course of their experience in the desert. And so the Gemara argues that it was only for Eidus. It was for a testimony that the Shekhinah was there. But they didn't really need the light of the menorah. What's one of the questions you could ask about this Gemara? Where are they lighting the menorah exactly?
Inside,
right. So how is the light of Hashem on the outside? Let's say there was this luminary essence, right? There was this incandescent light. There was, the Mishkan still got curtains, right? So they do need the light inside, right? So what's the Gemara really saying here? The Tosus asks the following question in source 15, Tamar, from the that little hyphen onwards. Am I not at Memshana la'olam kol la'olam kula la'ora shel makom holchin? Surely, why is it only 40 years that Shulei Hashem is with us all the time? Yesh v'voshim, v'chi Aaron k'shoya nichnas lifnim la'ora haya tzarech, v'alai memshana haya meir lahem, amur anan, b'chol mokomas, k'n amrim v'braisa, d'meleches ha'mishkan haya mistakel b'tafiach v'yodeh ma'ashe b'soichai, b'chavis v'yodeh ma'ashe b'soichai. He says, you know what, the light, during the time that they were in the desert, and the cloud was protecting them, the cloud allowed it that the light shone through substances, which meant that they were able to look in a barrel and know what was in the barrel to the light of the Anan. Which meant to say, what's the Gemara saying? The Gemara is saying, why would they need to light the menorah in the Mishkan if the light of Hashem through the cloud would allow them to see through the walls of the Mishkan? Right? So I mean, you said it was almost like it was transparent in the light of the Anan. That's what the Gemara is really asking over here. So Rav Moshe Shapiro, there are two different types of clouds. There's the cloud which will protect the nation of Israel through the desert, and there's the cloud which is not about protection, but it's about the presence of our HaKadosh Baruch Hu being imminent in our lives, so much so that in a certain sense physical barriers disappear. Now, if you think about this for a moment, that is the second cloud which the Vilna Gaon is talking about in Parshas Kisiso. Let's track the two clouds' history. Cloud number one, the protective cloud, the cloud on the outside, which surrounded them on four sides, above and below. That was almost like a box that protected them. That came at the time they left Egypt, and that is what Nehemiah is talking about. That never left them, even though we sinned. HaKadosh Baruch Hu carried on protecting us in the desert. We were still protected and ensconced in the cloud. But the second cloud, that refers to what the Vilna Gaon uses the pasuk ayin ba'ayin nira Hashem, that so to speak, eye to eye we see God. We see the presence of God is so obvious in our lives that spirituality overcomes physicality. That nistakel b'chavis v'yodeh ma'ashe b'soicha, that kind of reality where physical reality sort of melts away. That only happened for the first week when we left Mitzrayim, and only the Nevi'im could really see that. That it was not something that was like the Anan of the Haram Moriah. That was something which most of the humdrum, the regular proletariats, were not accessing. But that disappeared after the Kriyas Yamsuf. And when did it come back down again? Came down at Har Sinai. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence came down, Ki ve'anan, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu talks about, that he comes down in the cloud. What does it mean, the cloud? That wasn't just the cloud of the Adonai Akava. That means to say that this light of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which became so obvious in our lives. But guess what? 40 days later, that experience of Hashem disappeared. Why? Because we rejected it. We had other things to be doing. We were building an egel. That cloud did disappear and only came back again, says the Vilna Gaon. That presence of Hashem, that imminence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, only appeared in Tishrei again at Sukkos. So let me just take this idea one step further. The Vilna Gaon argues that Rav Moshe Shapiro takes this one step further to say, maybe that might be why there's a debate in the Gemara as to what the Sukkos are. Remember that there's two opinions, Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva, we saw at the beginning. There's Sukkos Mamish and there's Ananea Kavod. Maybe the Sukkos Mamish refers to the protective agency of the clouds, or the other one is referring to, so to speak, the spiritual inner core. And he says, in fact, if you take a look at the word Sukkah, usually the word sukkah comes from what word? What's the word that it's derived from? Schach. The sukkah is named after the schach. What does the schach literally mean? It's a cover. It's a protection, right? But there's another meaning of the word sukkah as well. And what is the name of Sarah Imenu before she was called Yisko? Why was she called Yisko, says Rashi? Shakol Sochin Biofya. That everybody was looking, everybody was gazing at her, at a beauty. Oh, yes, there's two interpretations. Good. So what does the word Sicha actually mean as well? Is to gaze, is to see. Which means, on the one hand, it seems that they're actually opposite ideas. The one is something which protects, which makes a division, and the other one pulls down division and allows the ability to be able to see. So the Sukkos itself, in a certain sense, is commemorating both these elements. The element of the continued protection and the element of the spiritual essence which we got, lost, and re-encapsulated at the times of Sukkos. And that's what the Vilna Gaon is saying. And this is not now a much more sophisticated perspective of what the Vilna Gaon and Shir HaShem were saying. The clouds on the outside remained, and that's what Nehemiah was talking about. The clouds on the inside, what it meant to know that Hashem was with us. That we were, there was something special about us. You came anywhere close to the Jews and you knew there was something different. That in a certain sense, reality fell, folded up. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, how do you see that presence of, where is HaKadosh Baruch Hu's imminence after the Chet HaEgel? Ki ve'anon eroeh, where? Al HaKapores. Hashem says, I will appear in a cloud, la'enei kol beis Yisrael. When did the Mishkan start getting set up, says the Vilna Gaon and Shir HaShirim? Of course, on the 15th of Tishrei. Meaning, how do you get to that idea of this light, right? And that now comes back to the Gemara. The Gemara was saying, wait a second, why do you need the menorah if you have the light of Hashem? Where was the light of Hashem? That light was Hashem's cloud, which was the Adonai Kavod, the return of Hashem's presence, which was happening on Sukkot as an expression of the building of the Mishkan, which is a, we'll call round two of the presence of Hashem. Says the Ramban, why do we make the Mishkan? It's not because a kapara for the Chet HaEgel, but it's a reflection of the experience of Har Sinai. What was Har Sinai? HaKadosh Baruch Hu coming down in the Anon, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence, where physical parameters melted away, where sight and hearing melted away. What happened in the Mishkan? Time and place melted away, right? When you have something the divine, when you have a wormhole into a different dimension, around the wormhole, certain parameters start breaking down. In the Mishkan, when the metaphysical is meeting the physical, you no longer have the parameters of space and time. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu is at Har Sinai, the parameters also break down as well, because that's what it means to be in the close divine presence, and that is the Anan, which we are celebrating, commemorating as well. So it's not just protection. That's the first level of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. It's much more than that. It's also the divine presence as well. Nachman, yes.
Now, the simple way
to yes.
If you look, the first phase, it's always called Amud Anan, Amud Eish, both in the Chemia and in the Shalach.
Good.
Verse 13. Whereas the loftier one is Anane HaKavod, and that's Bizkos Saharan. There's a Zohar that says, I am Aaron Nerit, the word Nerit is Oisi Saharan.
Beautiful.
It's a Zohar. So we're still going with the Mahalach. That Nane HaKavod is Bizkos Saharan.
Yes, but the inner clouds. Yeah, that's the suggestion. It doesn't fit with Chukas, that whole episode. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Now, Nachman?
Why does the rabbi think we focus on the Anane HaKavod as the greatest thing? Is that with that we would have died in the desert? But what about the food that coming down from Shemayim every day? We seem to overlook that our clothes grew with us.
Very good.
Why do we pick that?
Good, one? Yeah. So there were three main miracles that we know that happened in the desert. One was water, one was food, and one was clouds, right? So protection. So you say, why do we make a festival based on the Ananei HaKavod, just the protection? So this may answer, because it's really actually reflecting the presence of Hashem more than the actual physical attendance. But it is worthwhile noting that Chazal did actually relate to that, and that's why the first bracha of Birkas HaMazon was instituted by Moshe Rabbeinu himself, which means that actually the food and the sustenance gets more traction in our daily lives than the clouds do. Because every time we do Azonis HaOlam Kulo B'Tovah B'Chem B'Chesed V'Rachamim, what Moshe Rabbeinu was talking about right then was the manna. We translate that to the food that we buy in the store today and that we earn our money to get and cultivate if we're lucky, right? But that actually was referring to that. So Moshe Rabbeinu really encapsulated that in less of an anniversary, an annual anniversary, but in a daily experience. So it was taken, but it's a good question. It wasn't a festival.
Kedah, I think it is. The water we got through Meriba, we complain by water, Masa Meriba. The food we got through Meriva, we have nothing to eat. The Nanei HaKavod was pure, the Shvokos Sahaba, they bestowed it upon us.
There we go.
That's the Chidor.
Beautiful.
What I heard is that being that Kodesh Baruch Hu took us out of Mitzrayim, there's an actual obligation to provide us with the food and water, but it didn't have to make it comfortable. Without the
Nakama,
we would have survived. It would have been less pleasant.
Interesting. That's a good question.